morning, honorable members. Can we start? Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ayana Boss. I'm the committee secretary for the Teacher Mineral Resources. First, I want to apologize for the delay for the meeting, and the chairperson, unfortunately, is not available today. He's not doing well. In his absence, we are going to nominate the acting chairperson. Can I call upon members to nominate the acting chair?
Thank you, acting chair. Nominate the name of Honorable Ligani, acting chair only.
Thank you. Can I have a second for that? Honorable Stone.
Acting chairperson, thank you very much. I second the nomination.
Any objection? No objection. Thank you very much.
Apology for the chairperson. It seems like the chairperson is still not well. Yes, Honorable Varima.
The chairperson's health problems are persisting. Can I suggest that we as a committee extend our get well wishes to him as a committee?
Thank you for that. I think we all agree with that. There's a bunch of flowers and a card. It does seem like things are not looking good for him, but let's hope for a speedy recovery, and hopefully he'll be able to join us soon. Yes, is that okay?
Apologies, Acting Chair. Just from the administration side, just to emphasize that the election today is until the chairperson comes back, so that we won't do election of acting chairpersons every day. If you could have that minuted as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mkhize. And how much are you going to pay me? Thank you for that. Okay, then I think we've got quite a long day. So if members could perhaps, hopefully all the members and our guests have, from the department have had some tea, because I think we're going to have quite a pull of a day. And if members could bear out, because our program is supposed to have started at 9 o'clock and we are supposed to be here until 5 o'clock. But if we work smart, we could finish a little earlier than that. Hopefully we won't be a hit for that. After the presentation from the department and our exhausting issues, we will also be looking at the minutes. So we'll need to correct this afternoon as well, for the adoption of the outstanding minutes that we have. And hopefully, if we do a good job out of it, we can be out of here much earlier than the anticipated 5 o'clock, because I think there's no house today. So without a waste of time, can I request that we all introduce ourselves so that we know who's in the house, starting with the committee secretary.
My name is Ayanda Boss, the committee secretary.
My name is Nombuyiselo Mbuyi Mangele Mahlamini Ngele.
Rose Sonto, a member of the committee.
My name is morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dombigai Shomchogo, member for committee.
Good morning, I'm James Lorimer, committee member.
Good morning, my name is Chris Khululu, member of the committee.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Sibongiseni Ngcobo, the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Thobela Dabula, researcher from SAIO.
Good morning. My name is Marco Schmidt. I'm from the German Consulate General.
My name is Brittany Varga, and I'm from PMG.
Nick Garvey from
Sabine. Sorry, can I request that you press your mics for the recording so that you can hear who's in the house?
Misal Jaffe from Ethical Political Consulting.
Hi, good morning. Nick Garvey from Sabine.
Good morning. I'm Chris Andrews. I'm assisting the work of the committee. Good morning, I'm Mpumi Gavin from the DMI.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Soliha Smene from the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning, honourable members. It's Musa Mabuza, DMR.
Good morning, honourable members. From DMR.
Morning, honourable members. Ted Gamede, DMR.
Morning, honourable members. My name is David Nsiza from the DMR.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Joel Rapela from the DMR.
Good morning, honourable members.
Sorry. I know I'm not supposed to be warning veterans because they are my fathers. But Honourable Mchali, can you please have your phone at least on silence with due respect? Thank you very much.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Andre Cronier from the DMR.
Morning, Honourable Members. I'm Joseph Katenga from the DMR.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Chile Ramunja. I'm the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources.
Morning, Honourable Members. I'm Irene Chifura from DMR.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Kara Mkwanazi from DMR.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Kese Lesu from DMR.
Sorry, Honourable Members. I need to rectify. I'm from the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator.
Thank you for that.
Sure, I think that's the people who have introduced themselves.
Did I miss them? Where?
I think so.
There's two people who didn't introduce themselves. Can we have the introductions, please? Oh, we didn't hear. I'm sure we didn't hear them. Put on the mic. Thank you.
Brittany Vargas from PMG.
Marco Schmidt from the German Consulate General here in Cape Town.
Thank you very much. Now that we all know each other and hopefully we'll remember each other, can we start our meeting? We are having the annual report from DMR, and I'm sure, Gigi, you are ready for your presentation. Can we start immediately?
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. First, I would like to convey our speedy recovery for the Chairperson on behalf of the Department. We are here, Chairperson, to present the annual report of the Department for the year 2011-2012, and we really appreciate for this opportunity which you have given us to present this annual report. The presentation of the Department will be basically start by giving you an overview of the financials of the department, and this will be followed by presentations on branch performance information, starting with the chief financial officer and the corporate services, then moving to the mine health and safety, mine regulation, and mineral policy and promotion. I will start with the overview of the financials. The presentation in terms of the overview of the financials is as shown there. Firstly, we look at the financial performance, the annual financial statement, the auditor general's report, and the Section 32 report. If you look at the slide, basically it shows the programs, that is the administration, which will comprise the chief financial office, officer, and then the corporate services. You can look at the mine health and safety, mine regulation, and mine promotion. The total budget of the department comes to just above R1 billion. Next slide. An analysis of the variance of this budget shows that the overall underspending by the department was 9.5 million, which is about 0.92% of the budget. The main reasons for this underspending relates to the procurement of goods and services and operating lease contracts, whereby orders were received during 2011-2012 financial year, but delivery thereof took place subsequent to that. And also the IC projects, which were not completed on time, also contributed to the underspending, as payment could not be processed during the financial year as planned. This was mainly on Program 1, that is administration. When you look at the mine health and safety branch, it reflects basically 99.88% spending. An amount of 6.1 million was reallocated to other branches to cater for other expenditure. And when it comes to mineral regulation, it reflects 100% spending, but there were some challenges in terms of the fact that we also had to reallocate funds from other branches. The mineral promotion policy promotion branch reflected 99.77% spending, which is about 16.2 million was reallocated to other branches for higher than anticipated expenditure. When you look at the trend on utilization of funds, basically I've already stated on this, when you look at the basically the underspending, this the last row will basically show that the underspending is 0.92%. The previous year it was 0.11%. Okay? The underspending has been consistently below the 3% for the last 3 years. And for the year under review, I've already stated it's 0.92, and it's indicated on the previous, on actually slide six, it shows slide 5-1 on here. Now, when you look at the analysis of variance in statement of financial performance, this one, the first column there shows compensation of employees, in terms of basic salary, 248 million. Product payments was 39,000, the pensions 32 million, and the advertising was 1.3. Communication, this basically communication includes IT services, data, computer data. The SAMRAT, our system SAMRAT, basically operates under this environment, and it was about 14 million. The analysis of major variances in statement of financial performance, we looked at the audit costs, they were 4.8, and the previous year was 3.7, operating leases, 82 million rand, transaction in financial assets and liabilities was 209, buildings and other fixed structures, 864, machinery and equipment, and software and other intangibles were as shown there. The statement of financial performance variance continues. When you look at it, the staff costs increased by 14.56%, and the higher cost drivers on goods and services are mainly the audit costs, communication, and operating leases. There was a decrease in software costs due to purchase of less software in comparison to the previous year. If you look at this slide, it basically shows the current assets and current liabilities. Okay. In terms of the current assets, cash and cash equivalents, the cash which was in the bank was 9.3 million. Prepayments and advances, 89 million, and receivable was 18.984. When you look at the current liabilities, that is the voted funds to be surrendered, 9.5, that this was money which was not spent. Revenue to be surrendered is 3.09. And then the recoverable revenue is 2.129. The transfers, we've got to transfer money to our associated institutions. The Council for Society is shown there, 154 million. The Council for Mineral Technology, that is MINTEC, 196 million. The regulator, South African Diamond and Precious Regulator, we transferred money is 89 million. Mine Health and Safety Council is 5 million. Okay. When you look at the auditor's report, this report this year, which we are reporting on, we got an unqualified audit report, but there are still some challenges in terms of other issues. And we have set ourselves a goal of saying, you know, we have to get a clean report, and we're working very hard as management to ensure that we achieve that. The goal there was 2014, but even this year we're going to work hard and see if we cannot clean and ensure that we clean the audit report and get a clean report in this regard. When you look at the matters of emphasis of matters which were reported by the Auditor General, the first one is mainly related to the issues of that the corresponding figures of 31 March 2011 had been restated. And this was mainly, I think we had challenges in terms of the revenue when it comes to royalties, and we had to restate our financials. That is why we had that. Next one. Also, this is still linked to the royalties, the revenue which we had to collect. There were challenges there, and as a department, we have noticed that this is an area whereby we have to focus and really sort the problems when it comes to that. And money owing by the department was not always paid within 30 days of receiving an invoice or statement. Here we are at around 96% paid, and I think it is not good enough. It has to be 100%, and we will have to work hard when it comes to that one also. Revenue management, I've already touched on that. It's all the issues around the royalties. That is very important. We have to train our staff when it comes to that, ensure that, you know, the contracts are properly read, ensure that we are on top of issues there. And the Auditor General really highlighted this. In fact, this is why we got qualification the previous year. And this year, we really worked hard when it comes to that. In fact, the previous year, there were two issues. We had issues around the revenue. We had also issues around the liability, which we have already sorted out in this current financial liability in respect of MMF and the relief mines. Okay. Section 32 report in terms of expenditure and revenue analysis. The first column there shows economic classification. In terms of compensation of employees, I think there we are on target. We projected expenditure of 202 and we are on 199. Things are fine there. Goods and services also not bad. We just went over the projected expenditure. But at the bottom line, I think what is important is the last row there, which shows the totals there. Looking at the projected expenditure of 647, against projected, actual expenditure of 641. I think we are fine when it comes to that. Next one. Revenue here, we had, in terms of the projected revenue, just 13 million. And then when we compiled our financials, just 77 million. But this does not necessarily mean there's a negative impact here. What is happening is just reclassification of funds when it comes to this matter. Next one. And I thank you.
Honourable members, do you prefer us to deal with this or first listen to the rest of the presentation and ask later? I'm tempted to say that in this particular document, let's iron this out first. Okay, can we continue on? Yes? Yes, let's just go through this annual report first. If there's any questions, clarities, and engagement. Okay, Honorable Lorimer?
First of all, page 16, could you just talk a little bit more about that item one there, material misstatements of disclosure? How did that sort of thing happen? Is it a lack of training? And secondly on that, whose responsibility is that? It seems to me like there's rules laid down, and they should be quite clear. How can a mistake be made on something like that? Just a kickle.
Yes, I mean, we had challenges when it comes to this. The main issue here was around the issue of, one, the liability. As you remember, the liability in terms of ownerless and derelict mines, we had to calculate it, and we appointed actual scientists. So we had to sit down with the Auditor General to look at this issue and agree on how we're going to account that liability. So it also affected this. But there were also issues around the reality in terms of how they were captured. Certainly, there were challenges in the department, and we take note of that. We have addressed it. We sort them out. I can assure you there won't be the same problem. We're working hard in terms of addressing this matter. If you can look where we come from compared to last year, this time we were still struggling in terms of the liability, in terms of the reality. That's why we got qualified the audit report. And we have really worked hard. The team was working, I can tell you, Saturday, Sunday, sorting this matter. We brought in the Council for Society to sort the issues of the liability. And then we brought in actual scientists. The Auditor General also appointed its own actual scientists to verify what we have done. It was not an easy task. We pushed it. It took us a plus minus 5 months to work on this, and we did crack it again. I'm quite satisfied with what has happened.
Thank you, Chairperson. Slide 10, talks about increased staff costs. And when you look at it, it gives you hope that at least compliance with laws would be as required. But your page 16 is telling us that you are still struggling in complying with the laws and regulations. What would you attribute that to? What is it that that is not clicking? Because I take your increase in staff cost to say that your staff complement is 100%, and therefore everything needs to be done accordingly, unless otherwise.
Okay, I think when it comes to the issues of compliance, it's all around putting systems in place, and we're working hard when it comes to that. If you have got systems, for instance, I'll come with a simple basic system. If you are a department, you need to have a compliance register. Simple thing. Okay? I call it a system. So if you don't have something like that, you find that sometimes you miss out in terms of compliance. And whereby, you know, every week we can see what must we comply on. And I think it's a system. If it's a department doesn't have that, it will always have that challenge. We have implemented it. We are working on that. Every Monday we have got our ESCO. On our agenda item, we've got an item on compliance. And this gentleman who sits next to me is responsible for that. He comes every Monday and says, this week we've got to comply with this. It's a system which we have introduced to address this problem. And I'm sure we will eliminate all these matters. Every Monday he comes and says, this week this is what you must comply on. And I think once everybody is on board, that system, I can't see why we can't comply. There will be other issues, maybe procurement issues, whereby we have to sort them. But also we need to identify those areas and come with systems. And say, let's put a system in place. And I think we are getting there on our members in terms of putting systems in all the areas where we have to comply.
Do you have any time frames to that?
The compliance register is already in place. Okay, the one which we're still working on, we're looking at the financial areas now in terms of procurement, ensuring people don't find themselves, procuring things which are not approved. Okay, that we even agreed that in the next month or so we'll sit down and look at that system and say we don't want to find a situation where we've got irregular expenses. Taking one step at a time. And I can assure you by end of this year, all the systems will be there. We will clean, we will get a clean audit report. I think we're working hard towards that.
Okay, just one other thing. On your slide 10, and I don't know, the other side, I think it's slide 17. Your second bullet point, you are saying that your highest cost drivers and business services put audit cost, communication, operating leases. Can you expand a bit on that, on the operating leases? And the same statement related to how it is relevant to your slide 17. There's just issues perhaps that you might need clarity on that slide. If you could expatiate also on the operating of leases, what do you mean by the operating of leases?
Okay, well, operating leases will be our accommodation, very important part of where all our offices where we operate. We'll have to look at the issues of the IT, the printers, they will fall under the operating leases. Communication there, as stated it earlier, mainly data, our GIS system, which is used for licensing SAMRAD, also would fall under this. Okay, and all the IT related data issues, 3Gs will also fall under this. The audit costs, these are the costs related, the auditor general costs, those ones I think they have to be there, whether we like it or not, they'll always be there.
In terms of saying that it is your highest cost driver, this area that you just asked for, if you relate it to your page 17, goods and services, transfer of payments and all that, interest and rent on land, how would you relate the two, the statement from the previous page to this one? Because you worried about the percentages. If you look at the interest and rent on land, that's extremely high in terms of the variances.
Okay, if we relate to this slide, I agree you could have even added interest on wood and rent on land. We could have also included there, but no, it's not part of that. The transfer payment there is, I think we have touched on that. No, it's not part of that.
Okay.
Foundation for Children Assist.
Engagement with our stakeholders to keep them abreast with the policies.
We've also provided a monitoring tool which enables us to ensure that we are aware when the system is not available and ensure that we take remedial actions on time, which has resulted to an uptime of 98.1 on our ICT systems. When it comes to facilities that enable effective service delivery, we have actually achieved 50%, which was the target that we aim to achieve. We are aiming at ensuring that that actually improves in the outer year. On transformation policies, when it comes to procurement spending on targeted groups, we have achieved 51.3 versus the target. Versus the target, we have exceeded the target by 11.3. Internal processes and perspectives. Going back to compliance, we have reviewed and implemented 12 new policies, and of the 12, we have started implementing 11 thereof. Improved turnaround times. From the service catalog that we have implemented towards the end of last year, of those existing services on the catalog, we have relooked and improved 8 processes there, where the turnaround time has been cut to be a bit lesser than the initial intended turnaround time that was agreed on. The SLA, the service level agreement, we have signed 7 new SLA agreements, which are for our ICT systems, all other external services that we receive from consultants to ensure that they actually help us achieve as per the service catalog when they provide us with the services. And that has also yielded a 40% improvement on the turnaround time. Alignment of ICT with a business objective. We have actually put in place a system master plan, which will be talking to how do we move away from the silo systems that we have for our licensing system. So the plan is in place, which was a good achievement, where it's going to take us to ending up with one integrated licensing system which talks to the business objective. Learning and growth perspective. We have facilitated management and leadership development, and all development plans are aligned for the managers. So 5 managers have been have completed their management courses as targeted. On the attract, develop, and retain skills, 5 HR initiatives were implemented, and we continuously look at the exit interviews just to ensure that we learn from the exits and ensure that we retain the skill that we have in the department. Financial perspective. Alignment of budget to strategy. So 100% budget allocated to branch priorities. So we are saying here, the budget that's been allocated, we have prioritized on the branch priorities, and it was spent accordingly. So we exceeded the target thereof by 20%. I think this has been touched briefly on the presentation by the DG. To manage the cost effectively, waste and process and irregular expenditure was reduced by 86%, exceeding the target by 26%. The underspending below, which has also been discussed in the presentation, was 0.9, of which the compliance percentage, it has to be below 5%. We have been consistent in reducing this to a minimum of 3% across the 3 years. Maximize utilization of resources. 99% reduction in number of department assets disposed prior to the end of the life cycle, exceeded by the target by 94. On this one, is we have improved and on how we manage our asset register and the policies thereof, which has yielded good results for the financial year. Promote corporate governance. We are committed to adhering to 100% zero balance on key control accounts as prescribed. Challenges and corrective measures. We have had a major prior in the prior ACP where we were aiming to reduce the number of licensing costs, but we have learned that by near ending up with a master plan, which is the end result of one integrated licensing system, it does not dictate that by default the licensing cost will be reduced. So we are planning to have this measure removed because we are aware it's a measure that is not entirely under our control and it's not by default that it is a norm that it will result in that. Under learning and perspective, the percentage reduction in vacancy rate, we're still committed and working closely with corporate services to ensure that vacancies are filled within the required turnaround time, even though we know the challenges there on the skill pool, because from public and private sector, we're all pulling from the same pool, so the attraction of the right people often delays the mandate we need to achieve on the general plan, but we're committed where all possible, we strive to get to the compliance turnaround time. Reduction in staff turnover, that as well. We've seen, and it's normal that we always move for greener pastures, and what we're doing now proactively is when we get those exit reports, we try to do introspective to say why people are leaving so that we do corrective measures on those exits and try and retain people, and working together with corporate services working on retention strategy. Reduction in number of repeat audit findings. We have an action plan which talks to every finding that we've had. In the previous year, we've done very well where most of those issues and most of the action plan was successfully implemented. We still have a few challenges under ICT, which are closely managed, and we're striving to actually close them off by the end of the financial year. Implementation of spending plans. We have reviewed this measure to say shifting is unavoidable because there's emergency cases that happens during the year. But we have reclassified to say we'll only focus on shifting that's on economic classified items. And that will be managed closer without taking the others lightly. But that will be the key where we actually say if that actually is a higher trend, that should be properly and closely monitored. Execution of fraud and prevention made on the ERP. We have improved on this one, and I think it's with the help with the COO office where there is a plan in place, which is an action plan of what needs to be corrected, what have we done, how have we learned, so that also is closely monitored. Thank you.
I don't know, but do you want to engage on this one? Honorable Lorima, Honorable Sonto, then we'll come in later.
Thanks, Chair. It's not so much engagement on this particular issue. I've not been sure where to ask this question, so I'm just going to ask it now and direct it to you, DG. One of the two main areas of concern, as expressed to us yesterday by the Auditor General, was the whole issue of internal controls, of audit committee and internal auditing. Now, I know that in a sense you've answered this question already, but I'd just like to dig a little bit deeper into this. Their judgment was that those mechanisms were not working. Could you tell us a bit more about what you have changed since the period under review in terms of internal audits and the audit committee? Can you give us an idea of what was wrong before? Why did this happen? I do realize that there is some credit due to the department. It does seem that there has been work done. But it's a bit like your parents when you come home with a school report and you say, well, I got this percentage, and they say, but what happened to the answers that you got wrong? So I think there's some appreciation for progress that's made. But this was out of the mouths of the Auditor General. They said internal monitoring procedures aren't working properly. So just tell us a bit more about that, really. What you've changed, what was wrong before?
Say it as an achievement. You are attracting, you develop and retain skills. I was looking at your neighbor. Is that retention?
Measures there
in terms of percentage reduction in vacancy rate? How many vacancies do you have presently? And what time frames are there? Yes, we see that you say that you've got prescribed time frames, but what are those time frames? Because at the end of the day, we are faced with the same challenge that you complain about as well, that you are constantly losing people. At the same time, what are you doing to gain people? Because there is a budget allocation in relation to that, in terms of the vacancies. Yeah, that's it. Can you respond to all that?
Thank you, Honorable Member. I would like to respond on the one for internal control, the first one, internal control, which was found wanting during the audit, and the Auditor General actually raised their concern on that regard. This was relating to the legacy issue that we have had, which was also the basis of the qualification in the previous year for royalties as well as prospecting fees. After the audit last year, we committed that as a department we have to put something in place to ensure that at least we come up with a method or methodology in which we will be able to account for all the receivables, payables that are related to royalties as well as prospecting fees. One of the activities that we had to engage in was to ensure that we take out all the files of all the companies that are affected in payment of royalties. We had to go back and do calculations, proper calculations, looking at the size and land and all those contracts that entered into with the department, and the period in which the contract exists, and do proper calculation on each and every file. It was during this exercise that we established that the files that we have had were not actually giving all required information to substantiate our raising a receivable or any debt thereof. This is the time where even our internal control also went through the exercise to check how reliable can we go in terms of getting similar information or standardizing information, which will enable us to raise an accurate receivable and also collect something that we can, as the state, say that we are collecting what is due to the state. This is mainly on those issues that within the royalties files of the prospecting files, as well as the royalties files, there were information that were not consistent. Your affidavits were not consistent. Issues like your contracts that are ambiguous and officials are unable to really interpret. Those are some of the challenges that we came across and which the Auditor General raised issue, and we also further the department. Going forward, we really need to, and as I speak, the relevant program, mineral regulation, has already started to embark on an exercise which will then look into filing system and ensuring that there's the standardization of documentation that is required to substantiate all the receivables in the department. So I can confidently say that this is the issue that we agree with the finding, and also we felt that we need to do something in addressing that, which is the exercise that we have embarked on to ensure that all the files and the supporting documentation that we use as substantiating documents to raise receivables and outstanding revenue will be standardized in all those files. Thank you.
If I may also add, I think also what's critical is to implement continuous training of the staff, because you find that someone, you know, understands how to read this contract and then this person resigns, you know, all of a sudden a new person comes in. So we need to ensure that there's continuous training in the department. And we thought the best way of doing it is to centralize it and ensure that in our CFO, you know, holds regular training sessions with the staff from the regions and everybody, so that everybody can be on the same page when it comes to this matter. You want to talk about retention? If I may talk to you, it is a challenge. It's certainly when people have got skills, people push them. Fortunately, this time around, she's not pushed by private sector. She's still in the family, and she can still come and assist us. You know, it's a big challenge, and I think the best way of addressing this is to ensure that, you know, we train people in the department. There must always be a way in which, you know, the skills transfer. Okay? The subordinates of the heads of departments must always be engaged in forums. They must attend meetings like this where they're exposed, they're trained. And I think that is where we have to focus on. But we can't keep people when they want to leave. I think it's a challenge throughout the country, you know. The number of people who have got the skills is a challenge. You might have people with qualifications, but with the skills, it's a big challenge. And we have to continue to train. And also, I think the department must look at also training its own people, you know, taking people to conferences now and again. It's a big one, especially in finance. The other area where we have got challenges, I think the chief inspector of mine will talk to that one, because we can't compete with the salaries of private sector. That's no way. The mining engineers, because for inspectors, you need mining engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, and they poach them. They will come to us, we train them after, once they are fine, they are being poached. That is, in fact, our biggest problem. In filling the position of mine inspector. He will talk to that later on, the chief inspector of mine. Let's start the ICT issues
then.
Yes, just a quick one. I hear what you're saying about the problems with training and so on, and you say that we must do this. Is there an actual physical plan in place to provide this training? Is there now a new training system to make sure this doesn't happen again?
When it comes to the chief to the
about the department in general rather than the
we have plans in different areas. I mean, the chief inspector, they've got plans in terms of training people there. The inspectorates, we in the past we used to have a program with the Leeds University. We want to resuscitate that program whereby we can train them. They're in various areas. The corporate service wants to talk to them again.
Normally we would provide generic type of training, but where there's a need, there's a request from a branch, for instance, maybe from finance, to facilitate a certain type of training, yes, we would provide that. But we do offer like management training. We do offer training as the requirements of people's, PDPs and, you know, that kind of training. But that is mostly generic, but it's a special type of training that is needed, for instance, corporate governance, for instance, training on corporate governance. We are busy with IOD, you know, to come and provide that kind of training for our senior managers. So it's not your usual type of training, but if there's a need, yes, we do provide it, organize for it.
Yes, ma'am. I think it is a challenge, really. This issue of training people. Maybe it's not a suggestion that I'm going to give, but I think it helps if you train people and they leave after they are people, and after that, going out somewhere else, you will train and train and train. And training is not just free. It is money. Really, I don't know how to end it.
Perhaps at this point in time, one of the issues we also need to look at is from the committee side, it's the fact that the public service doesn't pay as well as perhaps the private sector does. But one of the issues we need to look at, which is also part of the problems presently in the mining industry, is the issue around the salary scales of employees versus the laws that are in place in specifically the labor sector, I'd say, and the public service itself, public service and administration, that perhaps we need to have some type of high strides of movement to start coordinating work to be able to see how best we can resolve the issue of perhaps standardizing law to ensure that salary scales across, because, I mean, the Constitution affects both public and private sectors. We find a way of standardizing salaries. If I'm in a mining engineer in working in DMR, there should be a difference with a mining engineer working in one of the private mining industries. And how best we can come to almost like a pyramid to solve that problem could perhaps even minimize the issues of the present strikes that are going on. How we're going to go about that, I don't know. I'm just mentioning it because it's an area that we need to start facing reality with, because I know for a fact that the DMR might even have a problem of nearly getting extra money to be able to fill in extra posts, which is a need in the department. So it's just an area of an eye-opener. Any comments? Honorable Lorimer, I can see.
So you're kicking over a beehive. You're kicking over a beehive, but I won't go there.
Then I think let's stop bashing at them. Okay, let's continue. Let's continue with it.
Okay. Thank you. I think also just to add to the point you've just made, we do have a provision where we make an official sign to say should they leave, they will have to pay back. But if you look at it, if I'm getting three times what I'm getting to the new post, I can pay you back. So it doesn't really address the problem to its entirety. Okay. On the issue on ERP, ERP stands for Enterprise Risk Management. And what it does, it looks at the whole departmental risk, and then each and every branch has to respond as to how they will mitigate the risk or absorb or eliminate, and then also provide timelines. So it's also managed like a risk register where we have to make sure that all identified risks are actually closed on time without them being materialized. On the licensing costs, the licensing cost, I think I just want to clarify here, it's got nothing to do with our licensing system, because it just gets, because we are the licensing department, it's not that licensing. So licensing cost we're talking about here is the right to utilize the software by the department from the service providers. And the point we're trying to make here is by mere adding two systems, doesn't mean your licensing cost would reduce, because the one that's coming on board might be the net effect of the two joined together or a variance of a percentage more. So we are wary of ensuring that it reduces, but it's not an implied that it will reduce. Under ICT alignment, yes, correct, Chair, there will be cost involved in the alignment, because alignment talks about having the right base of the infrastructure, which is standardized across all applications, which is a cost. And it also talks to process re-engineering, which is process improvement, and there is cost. And yes, we do not have sufficient budget that actually talks to that. And so what we've done is this initial process, this initial phase, we have focused on most activities that do not require funding, which is process re-engineering, ensuring that the infrastructure base even though the infrastructure will require funding. So the time frame is, for the next financial year, we're hoping to just build infrastructure so that the base is correct, accessibility is acceptable, and it makes easier for access of information and the accuracy thereof. The training, yes, the training has already started where we... The training is also part of the whole MSP, and the first phase is let's train ICT so that they are sufficient to support business. So that's also in place. To manage, okay, I will give this to Irene so that she takes it fully. The manage of cost effectively.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members. Talking to the improvements in incurring irregular expenditures, the department, we have reported an improvement in that the amount that we have reported or recorded in the current year, though it does not look like we have, it's a slight increase, it's a significant increase in that the amount that is appearing there is as a result of the effect of the changes that were requested of what was incurred in 2010-2011, when during the audit, the Auditor General felt that strongly that we need to reclassify the operating lease to finance leases, which then resulted in that being treated as irregular. By the time this was identified, we were already 6 months in the new, in this current financial aid that we are reporting in, which then effectively means that the payment that we have effected as operating lease from April then to September were already falling under the category that we have changed in 2010-11 on the recommendation of AG, which will then be classified, need to also be generalized and reclassified as finance lease. So at the end of the day, we also had to do that transaction to reclassify what we have already paid then from April to September, which is then we have to record it as a regular expenditure. But effectively, the amount that the department incurred as the regular expenditure is 292,000. Hence, our report should say we have improved. Thank you.
I think I missed another question under ICT alignment. With regards to financial systems of National Treasury, I think the committee is aware that there's the IFMS program that is running, and that's been driven by National Treasury, and they dictate when department has to align. So there is engagement where National Treasury is driving that, and at the point where we have to comply, that's also taken into consideration. On the issue of reduction of vacancy rate, we have to ensure that the filling of vacancies is within 4 months of the post being vacant. So that's what we need to comply to. And as to what we are doing to retain, we're training so that they feel, so that the employees feel they have the right skill to retain and add value. We also take all the lessons learned from the exit interviews, and we engage officials where we try to make sure that we take their own personal as a whole, personal development as a priority.
Did you want to say something? No, I think we also talk about the vacancies later on in the presentation. DGT Corporate Services will also talk to you, isn't it? Okay. Thanks. In terms, there was a question about internal audit and audit committee. With regards to the roles, the internal audit unit looks at the control processes, the adequacy, effectiveness, and efficiency of controls within the department. and the audit committee comes in to look at whatever internal audit does and what risk management does and what compliance does and all that. What is it that we changed in the previous year? Looking at the engagements that we had with the Auditor General, we have a dashboard that the AG always presents to us, which they've committed to updating quarterly. In the previous year, in the year prior year, before last year, we had yellow faces on internal audit, which were true. And in the main, they had indicated that the problem was that the chief audit executive acted at corporate services at some point. So they were raising an issue with regard to independence. But then that got sorted out because then there's a year period that needed to expire after that. So that got sorted out, and the revised dashboard from the Auditor General indicated that in terms of the governance structures, we are okay, which means looking at risk management, internal audit, and audit committee. The one thing that changed has been that we, as internal audit, we concentrated more in the previous year on issues that got the department qualified, rather than saying that we just stick to what the plan said, the plan which was approved by the audit committee. We had to revise the plan several times to ensure that we concentrate more on what the department got qualified on, which was the assets, the receivables issues, royalties and the other issue. With regard to audit committee, one thing that we have been told that we need to improve on has been engagements between the audit committee and the minister. That is one thing that we are going to work on going forward. I think that takes care of that. But otherwise, we do have a whole lot of engagements between ourselves as the department, internal audit, the audit committee, and the AG at the audit committee meetings. So we commit to further engaging with the Auditor General in terms of where gaps are, and all those gaps will be attended to.
Thanks, that's a very useful answer. It always helps to know what's being done differently and where there's a weakness. So that's very useful for my purposes. Thank you.
Okay, can we go on to the next presentation? On corporate services, can we continue that?
Thank you, Honourable Members. As corporate services, we will focus on our successes, challenges, and corrective measures. And I would like our presentation then to be read in conjunction with page 30 to 41 of the DMR annual report for clarity. As a reminder again of our purpose as corporate services, it is to enable the department to deliver on its mandate by providing strategic management and administrative support to the ministry and the department. On our successes, focusing on our external stakeholders, we communicated our DMRO programs and policies by way of setting up a new website and an intranet. We've had successful media briefings, public participation engagements, and positive and balanced newsletters published and broadcast. We contributed again externally to communities, mining communities that we deal with. We provided 15 mining career guidance workshops to communities, as well as 4 workshops at universities. In terms of transformation policies, in terms of transforming the mining industry by way of engaging women, especially women in the communities, we have strived to bringing them on board through projects like the next slide. Like the 3 projects that we got involved with, the Engcobo Bricklaying project, salt mining and copper beneficiation in Springbok in the Northern Cape. And that included, the three projects included plus minus 60 women. We had workshops and information sessions for vulnerable groups, and by that we mean women, the youth, and disabled persons. Focusing internally, our customers internally, we reviewed two guidelines and 14 policies. We ensured the implementation of our national vetting strategy by making sure that all new employees were screened, as well as all our new service providers. We facilitated leadership and management courses, wherein 45 managers completed management their management development courses. These are just the highlights of the successes that we have achieved as corporate services. Now, the challenges that we're still facing is inadequate or lack of funding for capacitating or implementing the approved structure by the DPSA. Our staff turnover rate could not be reduced considerably for reasons that have been espoused earlier, mainly being salaries, the competitive salaries that we are constantly, you know, have to battle with. And the vacancy rate that escalated in the last quarter. The reason for that, we don't know, but a lot of people, through the exit interviews, they will tell you, you know, they're leaving for better salaries, or some of them will tell you they're leaving, you know, to develop their careers. They don't see maybe, you know, proper career development, you know, within the department, and some of them leave for that. But we certainly are addressing that, although, you know, with difficulty, as would be elaborated on by Mine Health and Safety. Corrective measures, we have requested additional funding, which we will do through the MTF process for the implementation of the approved organization structure. We monitor and closely our staff turnover rate and implement recommendations of our exit interviews, and we also fast-tracking the filling of vacancies to within 4 months of the post becoming vacant. Thank you.
Mangele, Honorable Santo, Honorable Lorimer.
Thank you, Chair. On page 5. Corporate services successes. Just clarity on three projects, which Ngobo, Brick Lane, Salt Mining, and Copper. Those are the three ones. It's Ngobo, Brick Lane, Salt Mining, and Copper.
Copper beneficiation.
Are in progress. About 60 women are involved in this.
Yes.
These 60 women that are involved in this, are they, you see, these projects to start with, are they in one place?
No. There's Ngobo.
Yes, Ngobo,
yes. There's the salt mining.
Where?
In the Northern Cape.
Uh-huh.
And copper mining, copper beneficiation also in Springbok in the Northern Cape.
And the total of women.
Total of all women involved in all these 60. Three projects is 60. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Honorable Santo.
Thank you, Chairperson. One quick one. page 4. Any examples of the transformation policies that you are driving?
As I clarified, it's through these very projects, because we're trying to transform the mining industry to involve, this is now externally, we're trying to involve women in mining, and that's where we started with these projects. Whereas we have mineral regulation also, you know, through licenses and, you know, mining licenses, but for our part as corporate services, through special projects, you know, our directorate special projects, we involve them in, you know, projects, you know, small projects like what I've identified here, you know, training in terms of, you know, career guidance, you know, what maybe careers, you know, they can follow as you know, skills development, basically, you know, for the communities and even for the youth in particular. Through, for instance, through the minister's girl learner project, where last year we had about 20 girl learners that were given bursaries by the mining community. It is through this is the transformation that we're referring to. We also, in terms of youth wants to get involved in mining, and it's a very dicey area for us, and that's what regulation is also tackling with. So I will leave them to respond to that.
I'm laughing because we are becoming an endangered species. Concentrating on girls, on women, what about boys?
Well, the minister's plan is that maybe in a few years to come, she will have boys on the program as well. But for now, as we all know, girls have been disadvantaged for a long time, and the focus is on girls for now.
Somebody's becoming jealous. Honorable Larimo.
Thanks, Chair. This was one of the areas, the whole area of staff vacancies that the AG also focused on. I mean, in the AG report it says HR management, no improvement, which was one of the problems with their audit. First of all, you say you're fast-tracking the filling of vacancies. I see, incidentally, that from the annual report that it looks like you've got about a 15% vacancy rate. Could you tell us how that's, whether that's gone up or down from last year? What happens if you don't fill a vacancy in 4 months? So can I leave this with you and get the answers, and then I might have another one after that.
I think also in this point in time, one of the issues, are you done? Is it? Okay. One of the issues from the auditor, I think, there's an issue of where your employees were paid above 30% on overtime. Can you elaborate on that and just indicate to us what the complication of that has been? More so because apparently exceeding the 30% is not law, not compliance. And then also the other issue is the issue of the very vacant posts, which would normally stand open and exit even close to a year before they are filled. I think it goes back to what Honorable Lorimer wanted to know as to what do you then do when those vacancies do exit 12 months. And your actual plan of action in terms of issues concerning vacancies, because I think we've walked this road for quite some time now, where there's constantly problems when it comes to your issue of filling of vacancies. What is it? What is the problem? Is it the budget? Is it not getting enough skilled employees for the relevant posts? Or what is the issue around that?
Okay, maybe let me deal with vacancies first. We'll come to the AG's report. Vacancies longer than 12 months. The problem has been, in fact, our vacancy drivers, as we has been identified, is mine health and safety. They are the vacancy drivers of the department. We have advertised and advertised and advertised. We do not get responses. It's very, very strange, but that's the state of affairs. You would think that, you know, people have just don't respond to our advertisements. Mine Health and Safety will give a report about that. But in other areas, yes, we have been successful in terms of the responses from our advertisements, but the one that is really giving problems is Mine Health and Safety. That's our vacancy driver in the department.
I see that also administration permanent has said there's a 16.5% vacancy, and mineral policy and promotion is also a 15.5% vacancy. So those are quite high too.
Policy and promotion, yes, it has been also. But with policy and promotion, really, it's not so much. With them, it's more funding, I think, with policy and promotion. Inadequate funds. We don't have funds to fill in the vacancies there. So whereas in Mine Health and Safety, there are funds, but we don't have, we don't get responses. Policy is the other way around. It's funding that we don't have.
Don't maybe it's the way you advertise. How do you advertise for this weekend? Really, if you advertise, maybe you are using just one method that people don't have access to it.
As has been already alluded to, With Mine Health and Safety, you come and find somebody knows they can get better elsewhere. To come to the department, I suppose people think it's a waste of time. I don't know, you know, because we advertise the way we're supposed to advertise. Firstly, the requirements in terms of qualifications, in terms of skills, as well as the salary. The put-off, we don't know exactly what it is. Is it the salary? It can be the requirements, because I'm sure people have those qualifications out there. We just simply do not understand why we're not getting responses to the mine head, to the inspector advertisements. Maybe Mrs. can assist here.
Okay.
Thank you,
Honorable Chairperson. Just to make an example, in the last 3 years we spent more than R1 million on advertisement as a branch. And our inspectors are leaving us for, I mean, our inspectors, they generally get about 450,000 or between 450 and 500,000. They get offers of about R1.5 million if they have a government certificate of competence. And that excludes benefits. It excludes bonuses, it excludes share options and the other benefits. Another benefit, I'm told, one of our engineering inspectors, they even gave him a sign-on fee of about $1.5 million on top of the $1.5 million salary he's going to earn that year, so that he should not leave in the next 3 years. And to make a further point, we've recently advertised the chief director post. I think our chief directors earn about 900,000, and we only get about one application from the industry. And a chief director is at the general manager position at the mines. And the general managers at the mines, they get beyond R2 million. Some get R3 million, and this excludes benefits as other benefits as I've indicated. But you see, I think there is a general problem within the sector. I think that it's indicative of that, because we tend to share the same skills with the sector, so we are the easiest targets. And I think the other challenge is that, if you can still recall, earlier this year, because we were not happy with the performance of the industry, we intensified our enforcement measures. We believe that some of the mines, they were poaching our inspectors to sort of, you know, weaken our approach, and to a certain extent probably it might have worked, because we are not effectively covering the mine. And I think what we try to do, I mean, we have a learner inspector program, for instance, where we have already placed 19 learner inspectors. What we do, we get engineers without experience, but we put them at Goldfields Training Academy for 2 years, and then we put them at our regional offices for further 2 years to help them to get the government certificate of competence, what we call the GCC. But now, the downside of that, although we put them on a contract, they sign a contract, but if they want to leave, they'll have to pay us back at about 500,000. When they get their GCC, they also leave. And it is a challenge. And hence I said, it's a really a general problem. We're collaborating with the other stakeholders through MQA to make sure that there's enough skills pool within the sector. And this is long term, really, to make sure that there's enough skills pool. We have agreed on a further program to increase engineers. But the challenge is within the sector is not only the qualified engineers. The challenge is experienced engineers. And we are also looking at a program to offer an internship program to make sure that the mines themselves, they take some of the graduates, because it appears that they are not being taken. In fact, Mr. Mabuza will testify to that. We employed a mining engineer as an intern because the mines did not want to employ him. So through the MQA, there is a program that we are dealing with. Another challenge, which I think causes what we are experiencing now, is the low pass rate of the government certificate of competency. We administer mine overseers, mine managers, engineering, survey certificates as well. And the Chamber of Mines administers rock engineering and occupational hygiene related certificates. But we have low pass rates, especially with engineers. I mean, it's about 6%, and with the surveys, about 5%, mine overseers, about 9%. Okay, mine managers has increased a bit to beyond 40%. But because we don't have enough certificates, because you can't apply a person as a mine manager without a certificate. You can have a qualification and experience. You cannot be applied in terms of the law, appointed in terms of that. So through the MQA as well, we are looking at that to say why do we have, it has been a historical problem. We had the challenge of graduates, in fact, leaving the industry because of that. They are saying, I went to VET for 4 years, but I have to do this GCC for 5 years. And they don't really understand. And it's a frustration. It's a frustration on them. And we are actually looking at that. In terms of benefits, we have acknowledged we cannot match because the industry itself, I mean, they are competing against each other for the same skills. And hence the salaries are at, you know, supply demand sort of a thing. Hence the salaries are at this particular level. So there are some benefits that we are looking at. To try, and we've also made proposals to the Treasury to try and, you know, to keep our people. But we're also looking at the softer issues as well, you know, if they make an example, if people, there's a training course outside the country, we send people there, you know, to keep them with us. The other thing is that we have well-experienced inspectors as well who are about to retire, you know, We encourage them not to leave. You know, if he says I'm retiring, then we'll say we'll put you on a contract of a year. In terms of our policy, you can have a contract of 3 years, which is renewed every year. So, you know, we are not sitting down and say, hey, we are having a problem. But one thing I must emphasize, my leaders, is that I'm extremely proud to say. With inspectors under these circumstances.
I'd like to drill down deeper into this. Is it because the skills just aren't out there? And I suppose the question would be then, how important is transformation versus filling the post? In other words, do you leave any posts unfilled if there is not a suitable transformation candidate available? Shaking your head, that's your answer.
Did I catch that? Honorable member. No. I think it's not around color. The skills are not there. It's
its effect. We can't compete. I mean, as the chief inspector of mines just told you, I mean, 600,000 versus 1.5 million, I mean, you can't compare the two things. It's just the rest schemes which are there and the salaries which we offer these people can't compete with the mining industry. It's just that. And I think maybe the trick here is to flood the environment, bring in as many as possible of the young people, train them from universities, and ensure that we encourage people to study in this field. If there's one area, you find that one area where there are opportunities is in this mining area of inspectors and mining engineers. There are huge opportunities, but I think we need to ensure that young kids move into this environment and we actually provide them with the opportunities to train. And also, the competition is not only in South Africa, by the way. These people are very mobile. They can move to Australia. They've been pushed to Australia, to Canada. You know? So it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, just a quick note there. There's depressing news in the mining industry. If mining is shrinking, one way you could advertise it is maybe you don't get as much money in the public service, but at least your job is secure.
We all have to be millionaires. Okay, I think there's still some questions to answer.
Yeah, but just to add also, we need to understand that, you know, the kind of skills that we are taking are very young skills, young people who are not after job satisfaction as such. They're looking for money, so they're very mobile. You know, when you get to our age, yes, it's job satisfaction that you look for. But with the youngsters that we are trying to attract, it's money that rules, unfortunately. So they're going to be very, very mobile from that point of view. But if you look at that slide there that I've put up, this is where you can see what I meant when I said vacancies are around mine health and safety. Everybody and policy. Everybody has reduced except for policy and mine health and safety as at the 1st of October 2012 compared to October 2011, if you see that comparison. Everybody reduced their vacancies except for those two branches.
Okay. Chair, maybe you can remind me. There is a mine that we visited, a Petro Umfaz, who was very good. Where was it?
Don't know what exactly you have to do to get to a solution, but it's food for thought.
Okay, can you finish off the remaining questions so that we can break for tea?
On the 30% overtime payment, where there was confusion with us, with the department in particular, was with the area of the basic conditions that allowed for 40 hours as overtime allowed to people, and the DPSA, the Public Service Act, 30%. Now we know the AG wants us to focus on the 30%. We'll focus on the 30%. So there was that conflict. So we will then have to...
Have you corrected this in the process?
Well, it just came up now, you know, in the audit report. But before, it was never placed. Now that it has, then we have to go back now and focus on now the 30% only. Which means...
But there should be specifications and indication, especially in terms of the Labor Relations Act, isn't it?
What I'm saying is, with the Labor Relations Act, the basic conditions say you can work overtime of 40 hours, where if you calculate it, sometimes it's over 30%. So there's been that conflict. So now that we know that we need to focus on the 30%, we'll focus on 30%. Which means we have to send out a directive to people to say, you cannot work overtime of more than 40 hours. You have to stay within the 30% of your salary.
Yeah, but yes, Honorable Arjun.
Yeah, if you're going to ask the same thing, but how's that going to affect performance if you tell people they can only work so much overtime?
You see, that's a challenge we have to manage because now, you know, as I say, the unions now, you have to go and negotiate with the unions to say this is now being scrapped. But that's a challenge we have to resolve. We will have to sit and work out, you know, with management and everybody how we deal with that.
So if you haven't addressed this yet, this is something that's going to appear in the next annual report too, because you haven't managed to solve it yet.
No, as I was saying, it was never an issue before. It's just come up as an issue now. So, which means then it needs addressing. So halfway through the year, we've been paying, you know, so the better half of next year, I suppose, we'll have, or hopefully it will reduce what would have been really.
But what does National Treasury stipulate?
It has not said...
In terms of, I don't know, can I say the PFMA or master is related to labor law issues? I think it sounds more like labor law to me. There should have been a standard, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no... Yeah. That's what I'm saying, you know, it has been more of if we needed people to work overtime, if we needed 40 hours, yes, we allow them 40 hours because the basic conditions allowed for that. You know, so it has been that, but in some areas also, some areas will try to manage the 30%, some areas will try to manage the 40 hours. So as long as we're within those two, you know, we wavered between the two. So now that we know we have to look at one now, the 30%, we're going to have to do that, just the 30%.
But is that not going to affect the operations of the department?
Well, it might just, I don't know. Remember, it's a challenge we have to manage.
Yes,
yes, we have already analyzed the situation, and we have identified there are 17 people who are affected by this letter. So we have sat down and said, look, let's look at these 17 people and see how we can manage it. Certainly in some areas, it will affect productivity. But we have said, let's analyze what are these people doing and see if we cannot manage this situation. Maybe there could be a way of saying, maybe, okay, instead of a person starting at 8, if they're not active, somebody can do this person's work and this person can come in later on if he's got to work after hours, something like that. So we have analyzed it. We will manage it, but it's not a big number of people. At this stage, it's 17. We have actually analyzed the situation and we'll see how we address it.
You know, if you look at, let's take the chief inspectorate, who's also been constantly complaining, I think, of staff shortage and the relevant skills. And you find that it's a situation now where if you don't do it, there's danger. This is to the labourer. how would you then, we also in addition to that, you get a committed person in their place of employment where they just finish their job, they do their daily work as they should up to maximum, and you might feel that they are deserving, because there's also been a query about your issue of bonuses, the way you pay out your bonuses. What happens then in that instance? What I'm trying to ask is that, is it not a situation of looking at whether it's cost effectiveness, if I can put it that way, in the way you'll be spending that money in trying to pay the overtime or the bonuses? Is it not worth the spend rather than complain about this 30% versus the 40 hours of overtime? What is the issue around that? I still don't get it properly.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think it's a directive from Public Service Administration, and certainly it has got its own benefit in terms of catching the amount of money which people have been paid, but it will have negative impact if, you know, there are real benefits in terms of people working overtime. And I think we have got no choice but just to address it, because if we don't address it, we keep on, you know, been shown in the annual report. It's one of those things which we have got just to adhere to. But as I said, you know, we have sat down as management and said, how can we resolve it? So look, let's unpack, we're going to unpack with 17 people and say, you know, can we find a way of ensuring we minimize this overtime? And we have to comply, unfortunately. And we will try to do so.
Is there any other? I think you've handled all of them. You've handled all the issues. Can I then request that you take a? Can I ask that it be a 15-minute break for tea, and then we come back and finish off with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, this is Brittany. Hi, I'm doing the mental resources, and the meeting started late, but they said that it goes to like 5, so I didn't know if there's like a second half of the meeting that someone else is going to, or if I'm just going to stay the whole day. No, it's fine. I was just making sure that no one else is going to come in. Yes, it'll just be one long report. You should see the stack of presentations. Probably around then. We're just breaking now for tea. Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Right now we're good. No, I have everything. Okay, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Bye. Thank you.
do you know I'm not from here? How do you know I wasn't from here? I'm doing an internship with PMG, so I PMG Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Well, this is just for a resume thing. So I graduated a year ago. It's called California State University, San Marcos. So it's in San Diego. So that's where I was born and raised. So I couldn't really find like a job or anything. So then I did this. So well, meaning I was supposed to go to grad school. I did political science. So it's like you go to grad school or you go to law school. I didn't want to do either. So I just worked, traveled a little bit, and then now I'm doing an internship. And I've looked at jobs in here in South Africa and East Africa. But I couldn't really get anything. So I came over here, and then I'm kind of, like, talking, like, looking around for jobs.
So would you go to grad school eventually, or?
It depends.
Are you done with
it? It depends. Right now, I would say I'm done with it. But, like, in the States, it's just really, really expensive. And so I have to pay for college myself. So there was no way I wanted to. I just paid off my college loans, and then to go 2 years, and then. But hindsight, looking at a lot of jobs, I would have a lot more job opportunities if I did have my master's, but I was kind of tired of talking about things. Like, I'd rather do something. Yeah. Then how did you get into doing this then? Yeah. That sure didn't happen. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm hoping will happen eventually. Yeah.
can we go on? We're having what? Mine health and safety, ne? Yes. Can we start with that?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. My presentation outline will focus on successes, challenges, and the corrective measures. And the presentation should be read in conjunction with pages 49 to 62 of our department's annual report. In terms of the purpose of the inspectorate of the Mine Health and Safety Branch, is to execute the department's mandate to safeguard the health and safety of the mine employees and people affected by mining activities. And the objective is to reduce mining-related deaths, injuries, and in-house through the formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, and the application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance in the mining sector. In terms of some of the successes that we had during the 2011 and 12 fiscal period, there's been a 3% reduction in fatalities from 127 in 2010 to 123 in 2011, which is a 8% reduction in terms of the fatality rate. There's been a 19% reduction in fall of ground fatalities from 48 in 2010 to 39 in 2011. And for the first time, there has not been a mine disaster accident occurring last year in 5 years. Fires and explosives-related accidents dropped by 100% and 20% respectively. We've completed 84% of the inquiries that we have planned and 81% investigations that we have planned. We've achieved 119% audits that we have planned and 102 inspections that we have also planned. And these include the ministerial group audits. I think early this year when we saw that we were concerned with a low improvement of fatalities of 3%, we embarked on what we call the ministerial group audits, focusing on fall of ground, transport, silicosis, noise induced hearing loss, TB and non-communicable diseases, and also HIV and AIDS. Other achievements, we reviewed enforcement, administrative fine policy, and procedures fully, and they were also fully implemented, and also the Sunday Labor Permission guidelines, we reviewed it and implemented it. In terms of HRD, Human Resource Development, 8 senior managers attended and passed the VES Executive Development Program last year. There were 19 assistant inspectors placed in regional offices for differential training, as I've indicated. The 19 learner inspectors were put at Goldfields for 2 years. What happened here, we've advertised for people with degrees or diplomas in engineering, and then but without mining experience. And then we had an arrangement with Goldfields to impart the practical experience for 2 years, and also to help them to acquire the GCC. So they've been at Goldfields for 2 years, and now they are with us and also learning to be inspectors, but we're also assisting them to acquire the government certificate of competency. 17 officials attended other administrative and technical courses. Technical courses, we have an SLA with VET University, ready to take inspectors through the legal provisions, so that there must be a generic understanding and, you know, implementation of the law, and also other health and safety related matters. That is the current inspectors that are in the region. Next. This slide shows the total, the fatality and injury rates per million hours worked. If I may, I can show you on the big slide. The green shows the fatality rate, and the red shows the injury rate between 2003 and up to date. And if you just focus on the green one, there has been about a 70% improvement on fatality rate between 2003 and up to date, from a peak of 0.34 to one of 0.1%. Obviously, with the injury rate, you can clearly see that there's been a constant improvement with currently having the lowest fatality rate and the injury rate for that period. But we are still greatly concerned because our main objective, and with the other stakeholders, the mine, is to achieve a zero rate of fatalities and injuries. And that's our objective. Next slide. For last year performance between January and December, compared to the same period in 2010, as I indicated, there's been a 3% improvement on actual fatalities, but in terms of rates, there's been a drop from 0.12 to 0.11, which is an 8% drop. You can clearly see from the slide that we only managed to have a substantial improvement with the gold sector of about 18%, although we are still greatly concerned with the high number of fatalities on both the gold and the platinum sector. And hence, earlier this year, we have been giving them a lot of attention, especially the platinum sector, because we have not been seeing any improvement for the last 2 years. Next. Now, this year, we believe that as a result of us intensifying our enforcement measures early this year, we are seeing some improvement on all the commodities, obviously except gold, the gold sector. You can clearly see that there's been some improvement on the gold, the platinum sector, and the other sector had almost a 40% improvement. The total fatalities dropped by 16%, but you can clearly see that the number of fatalities are still high, according to us, and we are engaging with the relevant stakeholders to make sure that they is a drop. I think what I must also emphasize is that I think what is important for us is that we are seeing a change in attitudes, especially of the executives in the gold and the platinum sector, because of the measures that we are taking. And I'll elaborate more on what are they now doing to make sure that there's a sustainable improvement. Okay, this slide is sort of a business and a colorful slide, but it shows the fatalities per month between January 2011 and the end of September this year. This year's figures are indicated in green, and 2011 figures are indicated in pink. Now, if you focus between January and April, you can clearly see that there's been an improvement between January, a significant improvement between January and April. In fact, April we had the lowest fatalities of about 3 ever. And in between this April and January, we had about 80% drop in fatalities. But our greatest concern is the winter period. If you look in the last 3 to 5 years, you clearly see that it appears that most of the fatalities occur between May and July. If you look, and all the disasters, they happen between May and July. All the disasters that we had, it can be fires, it can be fall of ground in the last almost 5 years. They happen between that period. And something that we are also looking to say, why this particular period that we are having this. But I think what is encouraging for us as well is that for the period July to September, the past quarter, that is, we have recorded the lowest fatalities ever as well. And if you compare it with the same period the previous year, it's about 63% improvement from 36 to about 13 for this particular period. For us, it's encouraging because if you can look at the previous year and the other years, on average, they used to have about 11 fatalities per month. And then between July and August, there has been a significant improvement. And also, what we are also encouraged about is that there are more mining companies that go for more than 1 year without fatalities. And we are having more mines that, you know, go for 5 years, 10 years without fatalities. And I think for us, it's encouraging, but I think the issue is sustainability and how we maintain it. But as I said, we want to achieve zero, especially with fatalities. Our aim with the other stakeholders is zero. This slide shows the occupational diseases. AMR is an annual medical report. The mines, in terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act, are required to report the diseases or the outcomes of their medical surveillance. From the report that we have received, you can clearly see that if you compare 2010-11, there's been a reduction on silicosis cases reported, and also there's been a reduction in pulmonary TB cases reported of about 33%. And with the noise-induced hearing loss, the NIHL noise-induced hearing loss has not been any improvement there. PN is a co-workers pneumoconiosis. Mainly, it's been reported by the cold months. There's been not been an improvement there. Asbestosis, we don't have any asbestos mine anymore. I mean, the last one was decommissioned about 22 years ago. But I think this is clearly shows the consequence of exposure to dust, to noise, and, you know, any type of dust. It takes you about 20 years to acquire asbestosis. And that's why we're still having some of these cases being reported as well by the mine. Silico TV, there's been a significant improvement there, and there's been an increase, and there's been a significant improvement with the other related diseases. Now, I think although there's been some improvement there and there, we are still greatly concerned with the status of health and safety within the sector, especially with health. I mean, you're aware that some of the mines have also been taken to court for compensation by some of the mines because of the latency period of overexposure. You precipitate with silicosis, and some of the employees, they say, we need more. We've been given 16,000. We can get 2.5 or more. So I think we are working together, and those are the legacy issues that we are dealing with. But moving forward, we have established our chief directorate. It's also operational. There's a strategy that we put in place to make sure that there's some improvement on the challenges that we are facing on health. And last year we had a summit as well. We recommitted as all the three stakeholders, the labor organizations, the business, and ourselves, that we have to achieve zero fatalities, injuries, silicosis, noise-induced hearing loss. There must be a significant improvement on TB, HIV, and AIDS. There are action plans that we are monitoring through the Mine Health and Safety Council to make sure that we achieve. The council will be coming back. I think we'll be coming to present the annual report. We'll elaborate more on what we are doing in this regard through the council. And I think the other issue that we have also been concerned about is the issue of silicosis. Mines are required to report to us the exposure levels of dust, but we are concerned with some of the quality of the reports that we receive. Because some of the mines will say we don't have high cases of silica or of dust in our mines, but still, for the last 10 years, they've been reporting cases of silicosis. So we are working together with the council as well to verify whether they measure correctly and whether they also report adequately as well. So there is a project that we are working on with the council on that. On safety as well, early this year, as it has been widely reported, we have taken, we have intensified our enforcement measures to the mines, and we believe there's been improvement on that. Not in terms of numbers, but in terms of attitude as well. And we are going to continue implementing the measures, but obviously being guided by the provisions of the law and also the enforcement guidelines that we have also worked together with the stakeholders through workshops, regional workshops, so that they must understand that enforcement guidelines, including our inspectors as well, to do that. But I think one of the proactive work that we also do, we also arrange quarterly tripartite forums where the unions, management, and ourselves come together and say what are the issues of interest and what are the issues of concern on health and safety, and how can we work together. We believe as a department that alone we cannot make sure that there will be a significant improvement. It should be a collective approach that we are taking. And we also encourage the visibility of CEOs and company boards at mines. We are happy to report that some of the CEOs are now responding positively. In fact, one of the CEOs was saying to us, he's now leading, they've initiated some group audits at their mines, and he personally is leading those audits for us. And because previously he had a different attitude, but now he has actually changed. For us, it's encouraging. The chamber has also reported that they've established a CEO special team to look on safety and health related matters as well. So I think for us it's also encouraging. My other mines, they've established their own sort of summits or forums where we get invited And we have seen a significant improvement in terms of their performance as well because of those. I think for us it's really encouraging that we are doing that. We are also, as I've said here previously, we are monitoring the implementation of those summit commitments through the council. Early this year, you can still recall there were some concerns raised on Section 54, the implementation of the law in terms of Section 54, especially by the platinum sector. In fact, I forgot just to mention that we have seen some improvements, I think about 15% of the platinum fatalities for the first time in 2 years, and hence this year we've been taking these actions because they've been performing badly. But because of in response to the concerns that were raised by the mines, there was a task team that was formed to look at the concerns and make a proposal to the principal. And the proposals were made to the MICDET principals, and further work has been requested that should be done through the Mine Health and Safety Council with an assistance of the independent facilitator. And we're also reviewing our act to ensure that we eliminate interference and the destruction by lawyers during accident investigations and fatalities. It's one of the objectives of the review. I think the challenge that we are facing, and sometimes our investigations and inquiries take long because lawyers sometimes they drag the process out, is a great concern to us. So we are reviewing to the law to say, how can we make sure that we shorten that period that day. So I think from us, I've also spoken about the issue of capacity and the measures that the suggestion has requested. Thank you.
Mamungele? Honorable Lorimano.
Thank you, Chair. That's what he says, Gahawana. David, I'm sure by now you know my area of concern. All along, many things are about the funeral aspect of that. Let me congratulate you on page 4 about the 5 years that there hasn't been a fall of ground. Are you with me? That is why the name of Abom Song is Jesus Christ. After the Rasile, but make sure come next year, May, June, budget votes. Make sure that there's nothing that happens between now and then. Anyway, it really shows the improvement, the lot of work that we have done. I know it was not easy, and it has never been easy. But my question, page 6. Yes, the fatalities are still, the number is still high. But now, what are the causes of the fatalities? That's my only question, really. I appreciate the support.
Thank you, thank you. I think for last year, because this shows the slide for last year, we have been greatly concerned because 30% of our fatalities last year and the previous year on average have been fall of ground accidents. If you look in the last 20 years, in fact, beyond 30% has been fall of ground, followed by transport. Transport is where a person gets run over by an LDV or a truck, you know. And that's why we have started with what we call the ministerial group audits. We came up with audit tools that will focus on fall of ground. We will say fall of ground, when you go there, when you do the audit, these are the things that we have to focus on. Similarly with TMMs or the transport related issues, these are the issues that you have to. I'm glad to report that because of that approach that we have taken, We have seen about a 40% reduction in fatalities on fall of ground this year. And we have seen about a 46% drop in TMM, so transport-related fatalities this year. But now, the downside of it is that we are now seeing, this year we've seen an increase on general type of incidents. General is when a person falls from height, or maybe a person drowns, or maybe it's what they call the mud rush. A mud rush is when there is an uncontrolled run of mud underground from the overpasses. This year we had significant incidents that had to do with that. You know, historically our greatest challenge has been full of ground, say Smith City and TMMs, but now we are seeing a change in the profile of the incidents, and something that we are looking at as well, including fires as well, the disaster that we had in Driefontein in June. So I think the profile is changing. We are seeing a significant drop on full of ground and TMM, but the challenge is now general, you know. So I think we are concerned about that, and we are really looking to make a difference on that as well.
Honorable Lorimer.
Thanks. The easy ones first. Page 4. You said no mine disasters. What constitutes a disaster? Second one, I'd be interested to hear you speculate. The spike in fatalities May to July. Do you have any idea at all? Thirdly, can we see those MCDET recommendations on Section 54? I think it would be very useful to have a look at what's been recommended and what is being implemented. And then finally, to finish up with the tough one, what is the general says supply chain management is a big problem. Can you explain? There's a whole list here of it's Mine Health and Safety Council. Off the hook.
No, I'm not ready, but we is it
the council or is it the department?
No, it's the council.
The council. I don't know if it would be appropriate for him to answer.
Well, possibly not.
Let's see.
No, but just to reassure you, will come as the council and respond to the issues of the day. Just,
well, you've got a preview of my question.
Thank you for that. Okay, the first question is, what is a disaster? In terms of our definition, a disaster is where, in a single accident, more than four people lose their lives. More than four people, the disaster. Now, the July and also including June spikes, we can't understand why it's there. And hence we are saying it's something that we have to look into. Because if you look in the last past 5 years, you will clearly see disasters, June, July, fatalities, we see those spikes as well. So it's something that we really try to understand why that period. And we are looking at that.
Maybe
it's dangerous for me to do it. The issue of the recommendation. Okay, yes.
On the recommendation of the Section 54 investigation, I think we'll have to take the matter to the stakeholders. As you remember, the tripartite forum, which was involved in it, and I think once they have discussed this issue, we will inform them that you requested that the information be provided. Then they will have to make a decision at the tripartite forum.
I would be very surprised if they said no. Can we have a date by when you can get back to us on that?
Well, I'll have
let
to
us know.
Okay, I'll have to say the message to them through the minister, and then we'll do that. I can't commit now because they've got to call a meeting. They must sit down and discuss the issues. They've been looking at the recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you.
I want to bring in something I say is new. It's not new, really. When it comes to looking at the way you record your statistics, there's an area that is never reported, and that is the safety of women underground. Now, we had a report.
week or two ago from Benchmark. And it sounds like it's becoming a risk for women to be in mining, and yet we're encouraging women to go into mining. What are the chances for mine health and safety to start fitting them in some way in terms of their reporting systems, to say the deaths that are occurring in mines, because some of them are actually not really related to mine issues but to abuse. And the more vocal we become with that, and the more visible it also becomes, then it shows that we are really putting them in as an integral part of mining, and they are part of mining, so that there isn't that negative feeling, because some of the stories that we got are very gross. And you also get a system where, because it's such a hidden issue, you find that when we visited, I think it was, is it now Beatrix or Harmony, but one of the two mines, it was Beatrix, where we got a situation where you'd find that even the, from the union members, are actually talking up for those who are actually involved in abuse of women in mines. And those are issues that are not recorded anywhere, and I think it's an area of concern where they must also feel protected. And in terms of statistics, understanding also the number of women involved who are working underground and the progression, possible progression that is there in each of those mines to ensure that they are improving their status. And as much as we're saying they must go underground, start at base level, but you must also have a situation where you hear that they actually end up being in office. Kumangele made an example of the lady, the manager. We were very impressed with her. A young black girl who was simply enjoying her work, but with all the relevant qualifications. I think those are issues that need to start coming out in this annual report. I suppose it's just a matter to note, so that you can also see if there's an up in terms of equity and an improvement in terms of equity of participation of women and the concerns around mine health and safety issues.
Can I just say I would support that. I think it is a serious issue, and I'd like to see some kind of figures on that. I don't know whether that's the responsibility of Mine Health and Safety to collect those figures, but it's something that we should at least start monitoring.
Just to reassure, we do collect it, and obviously we'll, when we come back again, we'll just indicate the figures. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the department should be able to see where best they can fit it in terms of reporting, but it must be there. It must be clearing. You must also see it. You must hear about it. Because it just seems as though we only react when there's a reason to react. August month for women, then we start jumping around. Take a girl child to school, then we react. You know, it's just like the programs in the ministry, for example. We know for a fact that the minister also has a program on women. But you are reporting some projects. Yeah, okay, we'll think about the boy child. You also have some programs that are related to promoting women and their interest in mining. But if you get to randomly ask a question as to where are you in terms of steps improving, transformation, and so on, you don't really know what's going on. And for now, it's a fact. It's a big hidden issue on the safety of women in mining. And that should also be a major area of concern, in as much as we're saying, hey, there's pulmonary TB. It should be an issue of, hey, there's the danger of women in mines as well. So that doesn't proliferate. Honorable Sonto, boy child? Okay.
Things are influenced by the behavior of the workers. What is it that is being done to deal with that behavior? Because in the past, mine workers were treated, if I can take what Oprah Hugh says, that mentality bred that cruelty and anger in them. And therefore, whatever they do there, they know that it's not being known by the outside world, because in that compound, it's underground. Now, what is it that is being done, therefore? That might not be a question that is, well, it's a safety question. What is it that is being done to instill that human behavior? I'm not saying they are not human. I know I can be misquoted, as I was misquoted at one stage. So what are we doing in order to normalize the environment in these minds? Thanks.
Chen, yeah, to add to what he is saying, very strongly, Pakutiana, he calls it the behavior.
Honorable members, I've been out of order today. Can you please continue?
So what I wanted to say is, why are you silent about these things that are happening to women mine workers? You know what I mean. At some stage in one mine, we find out that it was a lift going down in shaft again with one woman and about two, three, four men, and it happened there. But why don't you report those things? Because now it looks as if they don't exist, and they do, and we want to know.
On the first one, their behavior. I think if we as the three stakeholders, we have acknowledged that the culture, the health and safety generally within the sector, the way it is, I mean, in the past century there's been 75,000 people who lost their lives only on accidents. So it speaks to, I think, the major cause we have agreed is the culture and the behavior in the mind. And if one has worked in the mind, you'll understand and appreciate what I'm referring to. I make sure that we're referring to. And we have commissioned a study to look at the issue of culture within the sector. Some of the things that were raised with as an outcome of that, and probably the Manners and Safety Council will talk more when they come on this. But one of the things that they were raised on issues of behavior is racism, and it's also the issues of gender discrimination as well within the sector. And now through the summit of last year, the 2011 summit, one of the action plans is to promote what we call the culture transformation framework. There's about 11 pillars, but we have prioritized about 5 or 6 of them. Yeah, I think including behaviors as well. Now it's required that the mines, and they have already started through the Chamber of Mines, they must report on what are the achievements on those pillars that we agreed upon. And I think for the first time as well, the issues of health and safety have been included in the mining charter for reporting. So they are also requested to report on the issue of culture or that I'm actually referring to. And I would like to acknowledge which, yes, I think we are also greatly concerned with the safety and the security of women within the sector. Because, I mean, you'll appreciate, Guti, there's never been women workers in Kotin before, but they are there now. And I suppose my other colleagues can talk more about it. But we have engaged with the mining sector. That probably this matter, especially I think this year, there's been 2 cases that have been reported which are alleged to be criminal. A lady was killed underground at one of the platinum mines early this month. And also in Free State, another lady was also killed underground as well. Not in the normal safety rate, but there were other issues that were involved. So we are constantly engaging the sector to really look at the issue of security of women. And now with the skills, and just to touch on each of the skills, so that there should be also progression. I think the mining charter, and I'm sure Jewel and Mr. Mabuza will touch on, it also speaks to the issue of women progression somehow. And we at the MQA, all the programs that we are doing, it can be bazaars, it can be management, it can be artisans, we are saying that we must provide for grants so that we must encourage mines to take more women in. And some of them are now engineers, and the MQA can go at length. I think that's our attempt as well, to promote the progression through the sector of mining, so that they should not only be at the lower level, but they must progress all the way to being a CEO, if they so wish. Thank you.
Any other issues around mine health and safety? Okay, can you go on to the, I think the regulator's listening, mineral regulation. Okay, can you start?
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I will be taking the committee through Program 3, Mineral Regulation. And in terms of the presentation outline, which focuses on non-financial performance information, in my presentation I will highlight the successes, key challenges, and corrective measures. The presentation should also be read in conjunction with pages 63 to 70 of the annual report of the department. Just as a way of a high-level recap, Program 3, which is Mineral Regulation, its purpose is to regulate the minerals and mining sector to ensure economic development, employment, and ensure transformation and environmental compliance, with an objective to drive transformation of the minerals and mining sector into one that is that competitively contributes to the sustainable development in the country. In terms of the successes, although the report, annual report would flag a number of them, just to list some of them, is around successes. We exceeded our target for conducting consultations and engagement with communities, as well as industry workshops. We also exceeded the target of new HDSA entrants applied in the mining industry by 35 from the set target of 200. We also exceeded the target of granting rights to new historical disadvantaged South African entities from 27 to 82. The 27 being the target broken down into the target of three per region. We also exceeded the target of potential jobs created through new mining, or growth in mining, which is aligned to the new growth path annual target of 14,000. We also exceeded the target on the...
What is being read is not here. It's not in this presentation. This 14,000, what not. Or am I having a wrong copy?
What I will do, I will stop making reference to numbers, because I was just lifting some of the numbers, honorable members, from the annual report. I will just talk to the presentation as it is, and then later on I'll just deal with the question.
I think my element also open the
annual report.
This one on the pages that is stipulated. Okay, continue.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. We exceeded the target on of inspections to monitor and enforce compliance. We, in respect of compliance, we took action to enforce compliance, and where we had identified that compliance was gross, measures were taken after compliance to revoke rights, initially resulting from a drive on the inspections that we were conducting. Next slide. Okay. Around challenges, honorable members would recall that there was a directive or a decision of the committee that the department should establish a compliance inspection unit. In compliance with the decision of the committee, the department moved on and developed and went further to have an approved enforcement and compliance structure with 114 posts created. The challenge is that at the moment it remains unfunded. We are having constant engagement with National Treasury, but at the moment it constitutes a challenge. The second challenge that we are facing as a branch relates to funding, to cover personnel, which will speak to funding of some of the approved and unfunded structures and posts, to cover both personnel as well as goods and services, which is crucial when you do inspections. The other challenge is around focus on inspections, where we then had to divert resources from processing applications, and the target for processing applications within prescribed time frames could therefore not be met. And the honorable members would recall that the annual report that we are presenting today also covers the latter part of the moratorium period that is the last part of the moratorium period that we're busy executing, more particularly also in the Mpumalanga area. So the domino effect of the audits that we're conducting during moratorium caused us to divert the resources as we presented when we presented our last annual report. So we're still recovering from that in terms of adherence to time frames. The other challenge that we then had identified is the increase in tensions and challenges between host communities and some mining companies, which we constantly deal with. And then the other challenge is also around some tensions or challenges within some community structures, which may have been established for purpose of liaising with mines or handling mining issues, which often then cause instability in some of the communities, where you also then find that there are some court actions taken and so on and so forth. The other challenge is around the fragmented licensing processes amongst the government departments. As honorable members would recall, that outside us as the DMR being responsible for implementing MPRDA, there is the Department of Environmental Affairs as well as Water Affairs that have got statutory and regulatory responsibilities in terms of their own pieces of legislation. The other challenge is around the application and the licensing system, more particularly what we refer to as SAMRAS, which is an online licensing system that we're implementing as a department that still requires further development. In terms of the corrective measures, as a department, through continuous engagement with National Treasury through the MTF process, we have been making submissions for bids to have our approved structures funded for personnel. The other area is the corrective measure to address the challenges that we have identified for ourselves is further development and implementation of additional modules on SAMRAT, which would be launched before the end of the financial year. The other corrective measure that we have put in place is to strengthen capacity of regional offices by resourcing our social and labor plans and the mine economy, environment and transformation components, and provide additional resources for monitoring and evaluation. And part of what we have been doing in this regard has been to identify some efficiencies within the branch in terms of capacity at head office, and then rerouting and or providing support with the capacity that we have at head office to support the regions, and conducting group audits and inspections as and when a need arises. The other corrective measure to address the fragmented licensing system has also been to strengthen capacity, because we at some point we have to take over NIMA
functions from Department of Environmental Affairs as part of an integrated licensing system, which we can talk to if honorable members would want us to respond to that one. The other corrective measure is also to develop an integrated licensing process to address environmental issues, because the fragmented licensing system is not assisting in terms of South Africa being an attractive investment destination, and I think honorable members would be aware that it gets flagged as one of those challenges to investing in South Africa from time to time. The other corrective measure that we have put in place is to increase the rate of enforcement and compliance inspections and impose statutory notices where companies are found to be non-compliant. And on that note, I would leave it there and just ask that I will take questions and respond. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Honourable
Ngale?
Chair, under challenges, Big Five, increase in tensions between host communities and mining companies. I don't know if you are aware that most mines don't, I'll call it payback to communities. They don't do that. No schools, no clinics in the area surrounding, especially I've seen that in Northern Cape. Nothing is being done for host communities. How do you correct that?
Arising out of the last question, is that really your problem? I'm not sure where the problem sits. Is it with you? Mining rights. A lot of questions about how long it takes mining rights to be granted. What's the quickest mining rights get granted? What's the longest it takes? What's the average amount of time it takes for mining rights to be granted? Is this average length of time getting better or not? If it is, great. If it's not, why not? How many mining rights have you revoked? I'm encouraged by the integrated licensing process. Can you tell us more about that? How's it going to work? Is the entire function going to be brought under DMR? Or is there going to be some kind of one-stop shop involving all the departments? So if you could tell us a little bit more about how that will work, and also if there are some timelines on this. When are we going to see it implemented? SAMRAD, could you tell us what exactly is going to, what are the changes? What have the problems been? And how are you fixing them? I think that's it.
Just to add, we've visited the Free State and the Northern Cape on our last oversight visit. There's a lot of unpleasantness with mine owners, especially the small-scale miners, where there appears to be a strain in your relationship, the relationship between the mine owners and the regional offices and its administration, to an extent that it gave us a picture that as a regulator you are there to chop them and get rid of them. I'm putting it harshly so because the general feeling is that these small miners that are trying to come up are not getting enough support from DMR to give them enough relevant guidance for them to reach to the standard or level that you expect them to perform at. To an extent that
I think in more than one mine, including KZN, you have a situation where they don't really see you or come into contact with regional managers, where they'd even be asking who is the regional manager or what area are they in terms of offices, where do we contact them from. And it does appear that visits, what you've noted is that visits are regular, for example, from the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate sector. But when it comes to the regulator or the regional managers, they are hardly known. Or you'll see them when a crisis has developed. The other issue is there's still a lot of difficulties around your licensing processes. The issuing of relevant licenses, the issuing of their mineral rights or mineral, whatever rights they are supposed to get in terms of mining, because I know there's several rights. It's a prospecting right, it's a mining right, and I don't know what other rights. But the process from one step to the next step is giving a lot of difficulty for them to eventually see themselves progressing in terms of their mining processes and achieving their own goals and objectives in those particular mines. I want you to elaborate to us now. I think Honorable Lorimer also asked the question in terms of how long does it take for them to get these mining rights? What are the difficulties? What are the issues surrounding this? Because the picture that we ourselves are fitted with is that it's a hell of a difficult task to get a mining right. It's a hell of a difficult task to get a prospecting right. There's always an issue around them receiving this, which then says they're challenged in the sense that they'll never really achieve in as far as being prospecting, being successful miners in the long run. And it becomes such a frustration that it eats on their pockets as well. The relationship is just not there. It's not good. And I think it's the fact that we've proven ourselves out of the oversight visits that we've had. You know, you get a situation where a particular mine in KZN, for example, you get them presenting to us, they're supposed to be CEO. And when you look at this guy, you even doubt if he's really a CEO of the company. The way he doesn't understand regulations. The way he makes it a norm that there has to be some form of vitality per month in a mine, and it's normal to him. We can give you those reports. It's absolutely normal that it must happen. And you ask them, how many times does DMR come? They'll give you a regular report, and you'll figure out that, oh, it's from Mine Health and Safety. But from the regulator, there's nothing much happening in advocacy and helping to keep up the momentum of the requirements that they need to meet to be successful miners. They use a friendly approach when it comes to that. I'm even critical of it. It's just not there. I don't know how you best elaborate that for us. The other issue, I think, it should also be an issue of the regulator, your mining regulation in particular, is the issue around the royalties. We hear that the royalties now have to be given out through Treasury, isn't it? They're submitted there, or the monies are given over to Treasury, and Treasury must decide. To me, it doesn't make sense. Unless you say to me that you have a fast-tracking relationship with Treasury to ensure that the beneficiation processes thereof